Everybody, welcome to Voices from the Frontlines, your Tuesday at 4 National Movement Building Show. And we're also trying to build the Pacifica Archives. And one of the things I think you know in terms of our passions is the whole question of history, in particular black history. This whole period, again, is young people who are denied their history, what Mumia Abu-Jamal called menticide, which is young people who are, especially black people, who have been cut off from a rich revolutionary history. So the Pacifica Archives are super important because in some ways you could say they're out of sync with history because they still believe in history. So we're trying to change history by getting you to learn history so you can make history. So today we have a lot of different tapes, but in particular, and I'm going to learn as we go, we're going to start with an introduction where Malcolm X is giving an introduction to Fannie Lou Hamer, two of my actually favorite people. And just a couple of thoughts. I mean, I'm a writer, and I write carefully, and I write draft after draft after draft because I pause after each word. Is that exactly the way I want to say it? I'm also a public speaker, and I do a lot of work thinking about how to communicate with people. And I realized that during the 60s, the main revolutionary form of communication was oration. Malcolm X did not write any great books. I'm sorry, the autobiography of Malcolm X is a good book, but it's Alex Haley's book. But if you look at all Malcolm X's greatest books, they're called The Speeches of Malcolm X. If you look at Fannie Lou Hamer's greatest book, it's called The Speeches of Fannie Lou Hamer. So what's not understood is we used to sit there for an hour or an hour and 15 minutes or an hour and a half, as long as they wanted to talk, King and Malcolm and Fannie Lou. We hung on their every word. We were in no hurry for them to finish. First of all, their entertainment value, they knew how to keep you going. And two, every one of their formulations was so original that we would not repeat them, interestingly, but we would watch them like they were our teachers and say, obviously I'm going to quote them, but what would be my version of this when I go back to Boston University or I go back to Harvard or I go back to Harlem? Or I go back to my own community organization, how can I sound, not mimic, but sound a little bit like Malcolm, sound a little like Fannie Lou Hamer, and learn from them? So, folks, this is super rich, and these premiums are really, really worth their weight in gold. So let's enjoy this, and then let's give a lot of money to the Pacifica Archive Program.
I couldn't help but be very impressed at the outstart when the Freedom Singers were singing the song Oginga Odinga, because Oginga Odinga is one of the foremost freedom fighters on the African continent. At the time he visited in Atlanta, Georgia, I think he was then the Minister of Home Affairs in Nairobi, in Kenya. But since Kenya became a republic last week, and Jomo Kenyatta ceased being the prime minister and became president, the same person that you are singing about, Oginga Odinga, is now Kenyatta's vice president. He's the number two man in the Kenya government. And the fact that you would be singing about him, to me, is quite significant. Two or three years ago, this wouldn't have been done. Two or three years ago, most of our people would choose to sing about someone who was, you know, passive and meek and humble and forgiving. But Oginga Odinga is not passive. He's not meek. He's not humble. He's not nonviolent, but he's free. Oginga Odinga is vice president under Jomo Kenyatta, and Jomo Kenyatta was considered to be the organizer of the Mau Mau. And I think you mentioned the Mau Mau in that song. And if you analyze closely those words, I think you'll have the key to how to straighten the situation out in Mississippi.
Yes, sir!
The Mau, when the nations of Africa are truly independent, and they will be truly independent because they're going about it in the right way, they will give the historians, will give the Prime Minister, or rather President Kenyatta, and the Mau Mau their rightful role in African history. They'll go down as the greatest African patriots and freedom fighters that continent ever knew, and they will be given credit for bringing about the independence of many of the existing independent states on that continent right now. There was a time when their image was negative, but today they're looked upon with respect, and their chief is the president, and their next chief is the vice president. And I have to take time to mention that because, in my opinion, not only in Mississippi and Alabama, but even right here in New York City, you and I can best learn how to get real freedom by studying how Kenyatta brought it to his people in Kenya, and how Odinga helped him, and the excellent job that was done by the Mau Mau freedom fighters. In fact, that's what we need in Mississippi. In Mississippi, we need a Mau Mau. In Alabama, we need a Mau Mau. In Georgia, we need a Mau Mau. Right here in Harlem and New York City, we need a Mau Mau. And I say it with no anger, but I say it with very careful forethought. The language that you and I have been speaking to this man with in the past hasn't reached him. And you can never really get your point across to a person until you learn how to communicate with him. If he speaks French, you can't speak German. You have to know what language he speaks and then speak to him in that language. And when I listen to Mrs. Hamer, a black woman, could be my mother, my sister, my daughter, describe what they had done to her in Mississippi, I ask myself, how in the world can we ever expect to be respected as men when we know that we will allow something like that to be done to our women and we do nothing about it? How can you and I be looked upon as men with black women being beaten and nothing being done about it? Black children and black babies being beaten and nothing being done about it? No, we don't deserve to be recognized and respected as men as long as our women can be brutalized in the manner as that this woman described and nothing be done about it, but we sit around singing, "We Shall Overcome." We need a Mau Mau. If they don't want to deal with the freedom, with the Freedom Democratic Party, then we'll give them something else to deal with. If they don't want to deal with the Student Nonviolent Committee, then we have to give them an alternative. But never stick someone out there without an alternative. We waste our time. Give them this or give them that. Give them the choice between this or that. When I was in Africa, I noticed some of the Africans got their freedom faster than others. And some areas of the African continent became independent faster than other areas. And I noticed that in the areas where independence had been gotten, someone got angry. And in the areas where independence had not been achieved yet, no one was angry. They were sad, they'd sit around and talk about their plight, but they weren't mad. And usually when people are sad, they don't do anything, they just cry over their condition. But when they get angry, they bring about a change. When they get angry, they aren't interested in logic, they aren't interested in odds, they aren't interested in consequences. When they get angry, they realize that the condition that they're in that their suffering is unjust, immoral, illegal, and that anything that they do to correct it or eliminate it, they're justified. And when you and I develop that type of anger and speak in that voice, then we'll get some kind of respect and recognition and some changes from these people who have been promising us falsely already for far too long. So you have to speak their language. The language that they were speaking to Mrs. Hamer was the language of brutality. Beasts they were, beating her. The two Negroes, they weren't at fault. They were just puppets. You don't blame the puppet, you blame the puppeteer. They were just carrying out someone else's orders. They were in someone else, under someone else's jurisdiction. They weren't at fault. In a way they were, but I still don't blame them. I put the blame on that man who gave the orders. And when you and I begin to look at him and see the language he speaks, the language of a brute, the language of someone who has no sense of morality, who absolutely ignores law, you and I then learn how to speak his language and we can communicate. But we will never communicate talking one language and he's talking another language. He's talking the language of violence and you and I running around with this little chicken pecking type of language and think that he's going to understand. Let's learn his language. If his language is with a shotgun, get a shotgun. His language, yes, I said. If he only understands the language of a rifle, get a rifle. If he only understands the language of a rope, get a rope. But don't waste time talking the wrong language to a man if you want to really communicate with him. Speak his language. And there's nothing wrong with that. If something was wrong with that language, the federal government would have stopped the cracker from speaking it to you and me. I might say, secondly, some people wonder, well, what has Harlem got to do? What does Mississippi have to do with Harlem? It isn't actually Mississippi. It's America. America is Mississippi. There's no such thing as a Mason-Dixon line. It's America. There's no such thing as the South. It's America. If one room in your house is dirty, you got a dirty house. If the closet is dirty, you got a dirty house. Don't say that that room is dirty, but the rest of my house is clean. You're over the whole house. You have authority over the whole house. The entire house is under your jurisdiction. And the mistake that you and I make is letting these northern crackers shift the weight to the southern crackers. Hey!
Well, I could talk for 5 hours about his 20 minutes, because my mind is, as always, blown by Malcolm X, and I think we understand what he's trying to teach us, but let's just go over a couple of points. I mean, the first thing is his ongoing struggle with Martin Luther King, who he never mentions by name, but he's always in a polemic with. So he says, you know, that there's some people 2 years ago when we heard Odinga, who would have been meek, who would have been nonviolent, who would have been passive. But now, this man is not passive. He's not nonviolent, but he's free. So if you want to be free, you have to reject nonviolence. That's a big, important thing that he's trying to say. The second thing, he's trying to make the case for anger, the angry black man. And I'm sure a lot of us have thought about this, but given if you read history, if you read what's been done to black women and men, the level of justifiable anger is almost impossible to describe. The system's terror of angry black people is because of its fear of what the payback it's going to get. So the Black Panthers, Malcolm, and the Mau Mau were symbols of the white man's worst nightmare, which is retribution. And the chicken's coming home to roost, as Malcolm said. When I was growing up, the Mau Mau, oh my God, that was a terrible, terrible word. The Mau Mau were like, black people must have eaten white people and put them in a pot and boiled them, and not that that would have been too bad, but that's not what they did. The Mau Mau was, in fact, a political organization in Kenya brilliantly constructed, but yeah, one of the issues they used was the issue of violence, and they used the issue of attacks on the British in particular, who controlled Kenya. So Oginga Odinga, who's the vice president, Oginga Odinga, Oginga Odinga, Oginga Odinga from Kenya, Oginga Odinga, Oginga Odinga, Oginga Odinga from Kenya. So we used to sing that. So he's saying that the Freedom Democratic Party, you have to remember this is now December of 1964, the Freedom Democratic Party has been defeated by the Democrats. People are very angry. So he's trying to make three or four points. One, break with the Democrats. Two, pay great attention to Africa. Three, as he said, if you have to speak their language. So if they speak the language of a shotgun, you need a shotgun. If they speak the language of a rifle, you got a rifle. And he says, it couldn't be against the law in the United States. Otherwise, how did the crackers use those rifles? So his point is that, of course, that the system uses violence to suppress. And finally, there's so many points. But his last point is that he's explaining the relationship of northern capitalism to southern feudalism and capitalism, which is in W.E.B. Du Bois' Black Reconstruction America. In 1877, the North cut a deal with the South to allow Jim Crow to come back. So let's understand, Jim Crow did not get created in the South. It was initiated in the South with the full support of the North, so that Northern capital basically withdrew the troops from the South, letting the Southern crackers come back and inflict a reign of terror on the very 400,000 black people who left slavery to join the Union Army, to help the Union Army win, and in payback for that, they eliminated essentially what's called Reconstruction. This is called history, and that's why we call it the Pacifica Radio Archives, Audio Preservation Drive, and Campus Campaign. The history is priceless, but the campaign has a price. The price is we got to give serious money, not little money, but serious money, because we have to operate at least in the thousands, folks. For the people in authority, that's not serious money, by the way. You know, as they said in one of the films with the formation of Facebook, it ain't nothing anymore to be a millionaire. You got to become a billionaire. Well, folks, we don't have a lot of billionaires on KPFK. We don't have a lot of on Pacifica. We don't have a lot of millionaires. But it doesn't matter. You can give higher than your actual income. What a concept. You can overgive. You can become an overgiver, which means that a substantial part of your money, it goes to the Pacifica Archives. So let's raise serious amounts of money in support of the Mau Mau, in support of Malcolm X, and support of Fannie Lou Hamer, and to support the Pacifica Radio Archives, Audio Preservation Drive, and Campus Campaign.
And this is Alan Minsky, and we're listening to Eric Mann here on Voices from the Frontlines edition of the Pacifica Radio Archives 13th Annual Drive and Campus Campaign. The number is 800-735-0230, 800-735-0230. And you can pick up for a $150 pledge the Campus Campaign Collection Volume 5, all material that has been collected over these past 2 years, including the entire talk you've been listening to, Malcolm X introducing Fannie Lou Hamer in Detroit, Michigan on December 20th, 1964. The Campus Campaign Volume 5 is packed with material. Jermaine Greer's famous appearance at the National Press Club in 1971, a WBAI news department person who went undercover to a Klan rally and got caught, by the way. The whole thing is documented there. There's so much stuff about Chile and Allende, Billie Holiday, Maya Angelou, Hugh Masekela, Edward Said, so much material here. Dick Gregory, 10 hours. Amiri Baraka, 10 hours. Sun Ra, 5 hours. All of this is part of the Campus Campaign, the Free Speech Movement 50th Anniversary Collection, and just from this past week in Los Angeles, the Voices of People's History event that was put on in Southern California, where you hear actors and performers performing the words of great radicals from across American history. All of that's part of Campus Campaign Volume 5, including, again, the Malcolm X talk that we were just listening to. For a $300 pledge, you can get the Campus Campaign Audio Encyclopedia, You'll get the Malcolm X speech we're hearing, along with 9 other hours of Malcolm X from the Pacifica Radio Archives, and that includes Jim Morrison, Noam Chomsky, Audre Lorde, Jimi Hendrix, Allen Ginsberg, Edward Said, and I'm just starting the list, folks, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. Malcolm X, preserving the voice of Malcolm X. Pacifica Radio was there recording Malcolm X, recording Fannie Lou Hamer, and again, priceless material. And in this era that we live in today, an era of mass incarceration, an era of the continuation of Jim Crow in American history, in the era of Ferguson, Missouri, it is important to preserve the voice of Malcolm X. And for those out there who can call 800-735-0230, and either at the $150 level get this speech, or the $300 level get the speech plus 9.5 other hours of Malcolm X, you yourself will have. You can bring it on your desktop. You can share it with your friends. Malcolm X, you'll own these speeches. This is priceless material from the Pacifica Radio Archives. 800-735-0230. 800-735-0230. And I have to say, Eric, man, you yourself in this hour and in the previous hours of Pacifica Radio Archives fund drives are actually, I think, also producing Pacifica Radio that will be archived and merits serious consideration to be packaged up in these collections, because your illuminations, your reflections on Malcolm X, what you learn and what you're bringing to the listeners listening to you is so important for people to hear in the second decade now of the 21st century, showing the true, continuing, absolute relevance of this material for our time. And maybe now is an opportunity for you to tell the people a little bit about the project of Voices from the Frontlines, because that itself is, again, so in line with so much of the material that you'll be getting here in the Pacifica Radio Archives, because it is live, vital Pacifica Radio. It is radio inflected by social justice. Tell the folks a little bit about the Voices from the Frontlines project before we return to Malcolm.
Well, in that this is a national broadcast, which is great, we want to talk to you about our understanding of Voices from the Frontlines, which is now called Voices from the Frontlines, your national movement-building show. It's always been a national movement-building show, but obviously, for me to do this, this isn't its 10th year. I have to reinvent myself. I've been in the movement for 50 years, and in order to have this level of energy that I do, enthusiasm, I do stay up all night dreaming up ways to fight the enemy, new ways. I don't want to do what I did yesterday. If I do, it's boring, and I always are shocked by the level of innovation that capitalism has, even though they call it creative destruction, which means they destroyed your house, they destroyed your job, they destroyed your life. But we don't have a national movement building show yet, and Pacifica and Voices is trying to build that. What I mean by that is, like, on election day, I turned on MSNBC and listened to all the, idiotic Democratic Party talking heads trying to make, anything I could say would be profane, but making something out of something and trying to put a spin on it. But there was no issues, no caring, no movement. So then we went to our own show, Voices from the Frontlines, your national movement building show. We had Guion Pereira from the Miami Workers' Center and from the Florida New Majority, and we had Philip Agnew from the Dream Defenders, who were the young, mainly black youth who took over the Florida State Legislature. And Philip and Guion and I are sitting there talking about, what are we going to do about the crisis of the Democratic Party? What are we going to do about the fact that, obviously, in 1964, when Fannie Lou Hamer found out the Democratic Party was not the People's Party, and now in 2014, when we still know that, but what are we going to do about black Latino leadership and unity? What are we going to do when our people are incarcerated? You know, they talk about mass incarceration, but mass incarceration means that 2.5 million people are in prison, which means they can't be in the streets organizing. This is the payback. When Malcolm said, you got to fight with the gun, you got to fight with the rifle, you got to talk Mau Mau, and they said, all right, you want to talk Mau Mau? What do you think mass incarceration is about? What do you think getting rid of 11 million immigrants is about, that most of them are from third world countries who are bringing great political consciousness to the United States? We'd like to be plugged into that network. How can we help build Voices from the Frontlines? You can reach me at eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com. We'd love to talk to you about it. And that's one reason I get so excited when they ask me, am I willing to come in on the Pacifica Radio Archives fundraisers every year or every 6 months. They don't have to ask me twice. I love doing it. because I really believe in it. You have to understand, I think Pacifica is our best hope. And Pacifica is underfunded. I could tell you 12 things wrong with Pacifica, except for one thing. It's the best thing out there. And 11 of them could be solved with money. One or two would be political. But the biggest problem with Pacifica is it's operating on a shoestring, and sometimes the culture of Pacifica suffers from that because we don't have the money to do long-term planning. We don't have any fat. We don't have any chance to innovate sometimes because we're just turning out the stuff every week. And yet, we turn the stuff out pretty darn good. So giving money to Pacifica is a very political act. It's very important. And I give, my wife Leanne, we give pretty substantially, especially because we also do a radio show of our own. So we love Voices from the Front Lines. We love Pacifica. And you know what? We really love giving money. We do. I think part of being in the movement today is you got to learn to love to give money and give a lot.
And this is Alan Minsky, and we're listening to Eric Mann here on Voices from the Front Lines edition of the Pacifica Radio Archives 13th Annual Drive and Campus Campaign. The number is 800-735-0230, 800-735-0230. And you can pick up for a $150 pledge the Campus Campaign Collection Volume 5, all material that has been collected over these past 2 years, including the entire talk you've been listening to, Malcolm X introducing Fannie Lou Hamer in Detroit, Michigan on December 20th, 1964. The number is 800-735-0230.
Hey, we're in the middle of a revolution, because I see the face of things to come. Yes, I do. Oh, your Constitution.
The senator from Mississippi, one senator from Mississippi, is over the House Judiciary Committee. He's in Washington, D.C., as Mrs. Hamer has pointed out, illegally. Every senator from a state where our people are deprived of the right to vote, they're in Washington, D.C., illegally. This country is a country whose governmental system is run by committees. House committees and Senate committees. The committee chairman occupies that position by dint of his seniority. Eastland is over the Judiciary Committee because he has more seniority than any other senator after the same post or on that committee. He's the chairman. Fulbright, another cracker from Arkansas, is over the Foreign Relations Committee. Ellender of Louisiana is over the Agriculture and Forestry Committee. Russell of Georgia is over the Armed Services Committee. And it goes right on down the line. Out of 16 committees, 10 of them are in the hands of Southern racists. Out of 20 congressional committees, 13 are in the hands, or at least before the recent elections, in the hands of Southern racists. Out of 36 committees that govern the foreign and domestic direction of this country, 23 are in the hands of Southern racists. And the reason they're in the hands of Southern racists is because the area from which they come, the black man is deprived of his right to vote. If we had the ballot in that area, those racists would not be in Washington, D.C. There'd be some black faces there. There'd be some brown and some yellow and some red faces there. There'd be some faces other than those cracker faces that are there right now. So what happens in Mississippi in the South has a direct bearing on what happens to you and me here in Harlem. And likewise, out of the Democratic Party, which black people supported recently, I think something like 97%, all of these crackers, and that's what they are, crackers, they belong to the Democratic Party. That's the party they belong to. Same one you belong to. Same one you support. Same one you say is going to get you this and get you that. Why, the base of the Democratic Party is in the South. It's the foundation of its authority is in the South. The head of the Democratic Party is sitting in the White House. He could have gotten Mrs. Hamer in Atlantic City. He could have opened up his mouth and had her seated.
Hubert Humphrey could have opened his mouth and had her seated. Wagner, the mayor right here, could have opened up his mouth and used his weight and had her seated. Don't be talking about some crackers down in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia. All of them are playing the same game. Lyndon B. Johnson is the head of the cracker party. Now, I don't want to be stepping on toes or saying things that you didn't think I was going to say, but don't ever, ever, ever call me up here to talk about Mississippi. It's controlled right up here from the north. Mississippi is controlled from the north. Alabama is controlled from the north. These northern crackers are in cahoots with the southern crackers. Only these northern crackers smile in your face and show you their teeth, and they stick the knife in your back when you turn around. You at least know what that man down there is doing, and you know how to deal with him. So all I say is this. This is all I say. That when you start talking about one, talk about the other. When you start worrying about the part or the piece, worry about the whole. And if this piece is no good, the entire pie is no good, because it all comes out of the same plate, and it's made up out of the same ingredients. Wagner is a Democrat. He belongs to the same party as Eastman. Johnson is a Democrat. He belongs to the same party as Eastman. Now, Wagner was in Atlantic City. Ray Jones was in Atlantic City. Lyndon B. Johnson was in Atlantic City. Hubert Humphrey was in Atlantic City. The crackers that you voted for were in Atlantic City. What did they do for you when you wanted to sit down? They were quiet. They were silent. They said, don't rock the boat, you might get Goldwater elected. So I just have one bit of a suggestion to offer before I sit down. And excuse me for raising my voice, but I feel like raising it. I have this bit of suggestion. Find out what Wagner is going to do in behalf of this resolution that you're trying to get through before January the 4th. Find out in advance, where does he stand on these Mississippi congressmen who are illegally coming up from the South to represent Democrats. Find out where the mayor of this city stands and make him come on record without dilly-dallying and without compromise. Find out where his friends stand on seating the Mississippians who are coming forth illegally. Find out where Ray Jones, who is one of the most powerful black Democrats in this city, find out where he stands before January the 4th. You can't talk about Rockefeller because he's a Republican, although he's in the same boat right along with the rest of them. So I say in my conclusion, as Mrs. Hamer pointed out, that the brothers and the sisters in Mississippi are being beaten and killed for no reason other than they want to be treated as first-class citizens. There's only one way to be a first-class citizen. There's only one way to be independent. There's only one way to be free. It's not something that someone gives to you. It's something that you take. Nobody can give you independence. Nobody can give you freedom. Nobody can give you equality or justice or anything. If you're a man, you take it. If you can't take it, you don't deserve it. Nobody can give it to you. So if you and I want freedom, if we want independence, if we want respect, if we want recognition, we obey the law. We be peaceful. But at the same time, at any moment that you and I are involved in any kind of action that is legal, that is in accord with our civil rights, in accord with the courts of this land, in accord with the Constitution, when all of these things are on our side, and we still can't get it, it's because we aren't on our own side. We yet don't realize the real price necessary to pay to see that these things are enforced where we're concerned. And until we realize this, they won't be enforced where we're concerned. We have to let the people in Mississippi, as well as Mississippi, New York, and elsewhere, know that freedom comes to us either by ballot or by bullets. That's the only way freedom is gotten. Freedom is gotten by ballots or bullets. These are the only two avenues, the only two roads, the only two methods, the only two means, either ballots or bullets. And when you know that, yes, when you know it, then you are careful how you use the word freedom. As long as you think we're gonna sing up on some, you come in and sing. I watch you. Those of you who are singing, are you also willing to do some swinging for some of these? No, this is true. They've always said that I'm anti-white. I'm for anybody who's for freedom.
Well, and listen to Malcolm X. This is Eric Mann. I'm the host of Voices from the Frontlines. I began in the Civil Rights Movement in September of 1964, which means about 3 months before this talk. I was with the Congress of Racial Equality Corps, which worked very closely with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC. We were considered the black militant groups, which we were, in opposition to, in some way, certainly the Urban League and the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and sort of in the middle was the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. On the other hand, it's important to understand that all five of those groups were essential to what we call the Black United Front, and without them, you wouldn't have had the March on Washington, because the complication of a national liberation movement means you need a lot of forces. And yes, Core and SNCC were on the cutting edge, but actually they were smart enough to know that we needed to meet and work with the NAACP. We needed to work with the Urban League. We needed to work, of course, with the SCLC. But Malcolm is now carrying out what Mao would call independence and initiative in the United Front. He sees his main job as saying the things that no one else will say. He's constantly looking for what is the edge. Yeah, he's always looking for the most provocative thing to say that people are going to go home and repeat to their friends. So his big line here, which is really, really critical, is that the Democratic Party is a very powerful party, and in fact, it's run by the North and the South. So the particular, his knowledge of the committee system of how Congress works is pretty grotesque, because what he's saying is that you get a committee chairmanship based on seniority. You get seniority by being elected time and time and time again. And in the South, Eastland and Ellender and Richard Russell and all these horrible, horrible racists, they live forever. They would be the heads of these committees, the Armed Forces Committee, the Justice Committee, and you couldn't move Congress. Now, I'm going to ask our listeners something if you want to go and give money to the Pacifica Archives. How did the Democratic Party passed the Civil Rights Act with all those racists? Think. And here's the interesting answer. They didn't. The Republican Party passed the Civil Rights Act. Did you know that Lyndon Johnson did not have enough Democratic votes in the Senate to pass it? He had to go to Everett Dirksen, who was a Republican. Ironically, Northern Republicans voted for the Civil Rights Act, and Southern Democrats voted against the Civil Rights Act. So, in fact, the Civil Rights Act was passed by an alliance of moderate to liberal Democrats and Northern Republicans, in which the Southern crackers, as he calls them, voted against it. The second thing that's very important, what he's saying, which is also very scary, though, is to a large degree, black people did get votes in the South and still could not get these people out. Why? Because these states are gerrymandered, because these states are still majority white states. And as soon as Democratic black people got the vote, what do you think Democratic white people did? They joined the Republican Party and got the hell out of the Democratic Party. Wouldn't even be next to a black person. They hated Republicans because that was the party of Lincoln. Then they hated the Democrats because it was the party of Lyndon Johnson. So either way, they hated any party that did anything about integration, which is why Malcolm X is trying to get northern black people, that's his audience, to break with the Democratic Party. That's his point here. He says, let's go after Ray Jones and ask him if he's going to seat the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, which is good. He's now going after black elected officials in Harlem and saying, ask him. And, of course, he's not, because he's in with Hubert Humphrey, who's in with Lyndon Johnson, and they all agreed in order to defeat Barry Goldwater, they had to seat the white Southern Democrats from Mississippi and not seat the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. So now what's going on is that there's still a fight going on, because I was thinking about that myself. When I joined CORE, there were still meetings about seating the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. I was trying to figure out, well, how could that be if it happened in June and I didn't join until September? And yet I remember William Kunstler. I remember Lawrence Guillot from SNCC. I remember being in Baltimore with CORE sometime in November, December, January. And what I must understand is that there was still a fight to seat integrated Democratic Party groups and to get rid of racist Democratic Party groups. So this is super rich history, is my point. I'm learning a lot. I know this stuff pretty well, folks. And every time I listen to this, there's just so much to learn. So you can't give a better present to yourself. Forget about it, to younger people, unless you're a younger person. You need to get the Archives Project. You need to give money to the KPFK Archives, because this is mind-blowing stuff. This is history in the making. It's not obvious. Malcolm X never said anything that was obvious.
800-735-0230 for a $150 pledge. The entire speech you were just listening to, it's part of the Campus Campaign Volume 5. And not only do you get that, plus another 100 hours of material from the Pacifica Radio Archives, all of it priceless, folks. You get that, plus an extra copy that you get to send to a library, to a prison, to a university campus, to a high school. 800-735-0230. That's right. It's a two-for-one deal, folks, and it'll arrive before Christmas. 800-735-0230 is the number to call. That's a $150 pledge. Same deal with the $300 pledge, except there you get 10 hours of Malcolm X, including the entire speech that we have been hearing excerpts from. And that is a $300 pledge for the Campus Campaign Audio Encyclopedia. That's 460 hours, and again, two for one. You get one, and you get to send one to the educational institution of your choice, or I believe you can just choose to get two sent to you, and then you can distribute it as you like. So one for you, maybe one for a Christmas gift. $300 pledge for the whole shebang, $150 for the Campus Campaign Volume 5. Actually, you can give it and get everything for $1,000 pledge. The archive is Circle, 800-plus hours. There's also a $500 pledge level, but we're concentrating on the $300 level with the 10 hours of Malcolm X included, along with Martin Luther King, John and Alice Coltrane, James Baldwin, George Carlin, Kurt Vonnegut, Gore Vidal. It goes on and on and on, folks. Allen Ginsberg, Edward Said, Noam Chomsky, all that in the $300 package. For the $150 package, it includes the speech we're listening to. It's material that's been compiled by the archives from the archives material just these past 2 years. So it's the new edition of the Campus Campaign Volume 5, including the talk you've been listening to, for $150 pledge of support. 800-735-0230, 800-735-0230.
I'm for anybody who's for freedom. I'm for anybody who's for justice. I'm for anybody who's for equality. I'm not for anybody who tells me to sit around and wait for mine. I'm not for anybody who tells me to turn the other cheek when a cracker is busting up my jaw. I'm not for anybody. I'm not for anybody who tells black people to be nonviolent while nobody is telling white people to be nonviolent. So I just say in my conclusion, I know I'm in the church and I probably shouldn't be talking like this, but but Jesus himself, he was ready to turn the synagogue inside out and upside down when things weren't going right. In fact, in the book of Revelation, they got Jesus sitting on a sword sitting on a horse with a sword in his hand, getting ready to go into action. But they don't tell you or me about that Jesus. They only tell you and me about that peaceful Jesus. They never let you get down to the end of the book. They keep you up there where everything is, you know, nonviolent. No, go read the whole book. And when you get in Revelation, you find that even Jesus' patience ran out. And when his patience ran out, he got the whole situation straightened out. He picked up the sword. So, I believe that there are some white people who might be sincere. But I think they should prove it. And you can't prove it to me by singing with me. You can't prove it to me by being nonviolent. No. You can prove it by recognizing the law of justice. And the law of justice is, as you sow, so must you reap. The law of justice is, he who kills by the sword shall be killed by the sword. This is justice. Now, if you are with us, all I say is, make the same kind of contribution with us in our struggle for freedom that all white people have always made when they were struggling for their own freedom. And your freedom was, you were struggling for your freedom in the Revolutionary War. When your own Patrick Henry said, liberty or death, and George Washington got the cannons out, and all the rest of them that you taught me to worship as my heroes, they were fighters, they were warriors. But now when the time comes for our freedom, you want to reach back in the bag and grab somebody who's nonviolent and peaceful and forgiving and long-suffering. I don't go for that. No. I say that a black man's freedom is as valuable as a white man's freedom. And I say that a black man has the right to do whatever is necessary to get his freedom that other human beings have done to get their freedom. Just a moment. And I say that you and I will never get our freedom. Nonviolently and patiently and lovingly. We will never get it until we let the world know that as other human beings have laid down their lives for freedom and also taken life for freedom, that you and I are ready and willing and equipped and qualified to do the same thing. It's a shame that Mrs. Hamer came out here this afternoon where there are so few people. It's a shame. All of our people in Harlem should have heard her describe what they did to her down there. Because I think the people in Harlem are more capable of evening the score than people are anywhere else in this country. People in Harlem, yes, they are. And they need to hear her story. They need to know more about firsthand what's happening down there, especially to our women. And then they need some lessons in tactics and strategy on how to get even. And I, for one, will make the first contribution to any fund that's raised for the purpose of evening the score. I, for one, will make the first contribution. Whenever someone commits murder, what do? You put a reward, wanted, dead or alive, for the murderer. Yes, learn how to pull.
And we're running out of time here. Eric Mann, your final thought, why should people pledge?
Well, every time I listen to Amy Goodman talk about it, if I give her $2,000, she's going to take me to dinner, I go, I'd like to do that. I'd like to have dinner. So for $1,000, Alan Minsky and I are going to take you to a great restaurant right across. You have to fly to L.A. They have garlic fries off the chart. They're going to have terrific wine. And me and Alan Minsky are going to charm you with the same level of nonstop Pacifica pitching that we're doing right now, because we're cool people. You're a cool person. After you give Amy the $2,000, give us the $1,000 for the Pacifica Archives. Fly to L.A., and we will walk you around the City of Autos. We'll bring you to South L.A., East L.A., and then we're going to take you to all the best restaurants under $10 that money can buy.
800-735-0230. Again, priceless material from the archives. Malcolm X, recorded by Pacifica Radio, December 20th, 1964, introducing Fannie Lou Hamer in Detroit. $150 pledge, get the entire speech plus 100 other hours of material from the archives. Get for $300 the entire speech plus 9 other hours of Malcolm X and that would be 450 other hours of material from the archive. So the $150 level or the $300 level, either one you pledge at, you get the package twice. One you can send to an institution, one for yourself, or just ask for them both to be sent to yourself. One is a gift, one for you. 800-735-0230, 800-735-0230. I'm Alan Minsky. Take it away, Eric, man.
Just one last thought. I don't know the legality of sending this to prisons, but if it could be sent from Pacifica, which we should look into, because we run a publishing house at the Labor Community Strategy Center called Frontlines Press, we're able to send books directly to prisoners because we are a true publishing house. These prisoners are starved for this kind of material. You know, when we talk about 2.5 million prisoners, a million of whom are black, imagine being stuck in a cell 24 hours a day. And if you had access to this, I just cannot think of a greater gift as a way to struggle against mass incarceration. So let's look into the possibilities, but it's very possible that you could get one and ask Pacifica to mail something to somebody directly from the station that might just open up a tremendous liberatory consciousness for some prisoners who could not thank you enough.
And, Eric, that is a fantastic idea. In fact, the campus campaign is structured perfectly for that. Call in, pledge support, 800-735-0230, and not one, but two copies of one of the thank you gifts that we're featuring this hour will be sent to you. The campus campaign audio encyclopedia. Hours upon hours of Malcolm X are included. It is a $300 pledge for 460 hours of material, including Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., Noam Chomsky, Audre Lorde, Gore Vidal, Henry Miller, Paul Robeson. It is just a phenomenal collection, and not one, but two of them will be sent to you when you call 800-735-0230. Do the research. Find out how to contribute it to a prison institution so that this can get into the hands of people who will be absolutely thrilled to have it, folks. And for $150 pledge of support, the Campus Campaign Volume 5, which includes the speech that we heard this hour, Malcolm X introducing Fannie Lou Hamer from December 20th, 1964, and that includes 100 hours of material. The entire Campus Campaign Volume 5 is part of the $300 pledge, but get it alone, 100 hours of material, including the speech we featured this hour, for a $150 pledge. And again, not one, but two copies of the material are sent to you in time for the holidays, folks. 800-735-0230. I'm joined by Brian DeShazer. There's a call right now. We need nine more calls, Brian, between now and the top of the hour to reach our goal for the hour. Call and pledge, $150 level, a $300 level, and most importantly, make sure that this priceless material continues to be preserved at the Pacifica Radio Archives, the place that has, I think, more Malcolm X recordings than any other place, or are there places that match it?
Actually, it's probably right up at the top. You know, Manny Marable, who wrote one of the most definitive books about Malcolm X just a few years ago, utilized the Pacifica Radio Archives recordings and from our first broadcast as his research for his book. And he states to us that listening to Malcolm was more important to him than reading him on the page, mm-hmm. because the pauses, the intonation, the rhythm that he spoke with was all important about how to write that that biography. 1-800-735-0230. We really appreciate Eric Mann and his insight into Malcolm X. You know, so for the small map, $50, you get a T-shirt and 20 hours of audio. $150, you get 100 hours of audio that has never been offered before. So if you're a previous campus campaign donor, if you donate $150, you'll get the newest material that has not been offered before. $300, you get 460 hours. $500, 660 hours. $1,000, 800 hours plus. All from the Pacifica Radio Archives. You know, in the $1,000 collection, Alan Minsky, we have the complete Alan Watts collection, 100 speeches, audiobook, 13 books read in their entirety, 65 years, 65 voices, the music collection, 32 hours, 1-800-735-0230, 1-800-735-0230. You can also go online at supportpra.org and review all the details of all the gifts.
There's another call. We need 8 more calls between now and the top of the hour. Let's do this all right now. You out there listening, call in. Preserve real American history, real American voices. There's another call. We need 7 more calls. 800-735-0230. Again, Malcolm X, December 20th, 1964, at either the $150 or $300 level, the featured speech that we had this hour, Eric Mann commenting on it. Call 800-735-0230. In the $150 collections, there is the 50th anniversary celebration of the free speech movement, Mario Savio and the students at Berkeley rising up to demand their rights as citizens to free speech on their campus. There's another call. 6 more calls between now and the top of the hour. We can do it, folks. You out there listening, calling in for the $300 level. Everything in the $150 package, plus, wow, June Jordans, Gwendolyn Brooks, Kurt Vonnegut, George Carlin, of course, very, very famous relationship, celebrated relationship with Pacifica Radio, Ray Bradbury, Maya Angelou, Jimi Hendrix, Allen Ginsberg, Alice Walker. So many people are a part, hours upon hours of their material from Pacifica's history is included in the $300 package. 800-735-0230, and Malcolm X, a load of Malcolm X in that $300 package. 800-735-0230. Brian DeShazer, we got to get to this goal. Call in, you out there in Washington, New York, Houston, and the region surrounding them, up in the Bay Area and down here in Southern California, Central California, down at San Diego. Call 800-735-0230.
Yes, in the next coming hour, we'll be going to KPFA and Dennis Bertstein with the special flashpoints. And we want to just say that Ian Masters won't be on today. If you're here in LA expecting to hear him, you won't be. But tomorrow, he's going to be appearing at the Hammer Forum Wednesday at 7:30 with a moderating a panel with scholars from the 20th century on China, something like that. Anyway, if you're looking for Ian, do that. And the upcoming up next is Dennis Bernstein. But stay on the line, 1-800-735-0230 or supportpra.org. I so appreciate you, Alan Minsky, for helping us out and caring about the archives preservation.
Thank you, and keep those calls coming. 800-735-0230. Malcolm X, the collection is unrivaled.